He is not Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Morning, Jill.
Good morning, Jay. So, first thing I want to ask about, unless there's something that you would like to immediately, in true Robin fashion.
I don't need to jump into things. If you have questions, go ahead, shoot.
The thing that I am most interested in, as you can well imagine, there are a couple things because I see. Let's start with the autonomous driving incident.
Okay.
Not because of technology, but because it's pretty apparent that in the case in Tempe, Arizona, something went sufficiently wrong that Uber decided to at least temporarily take all of their vehicles off the road.
I'll be honest with you. I read a little bit about it, and I wanted to talk about it. I have not read detailed accident reports. It seems to be that had a normal or a real driver being driving the car, the outcome might have been the same. I'm not sure that Uber's driving self-driving technology was at fault.
The fault, if there is one, seems to be that it didn't recognize that whatever the, at least according to what's come out, that it didn't register the person crossing the street.
And that's very possible. But nothing at this point, I believe, and I'm being cautious about this, nothing indicates that a person being behind the wheel might have recognized.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something happened that caused them to pull. You know, you always have
I think what caused Uber to pull out of some of their testing and
temporarily, I'm sure.
Temporarily is the spin that was thrown at the whole incident after the fact. And Waymo's claims since, you know, Uber, Waymo, and Cruise, which is a company owned by GM, are big competitors in the autonomous driving business and are racing to get out to market before one another. Waymo is what used to be Google self-driving cars, and there is data to suggest that Waymo is ahead of Uber and Cruise may be as well.
Cruise is GM's.
And all three of them report incidents I'm not sure who, but they report incidents. And what they do is report the number of human interferences with the self-driving cars. So the number of times per mile or per 1,000 miles that people have to, drivers have to interfere and take over the car. And I think in Uber's case, we're talking about once every, I don't remember the number, but it was like not very, very high, like every few hundred miles, the driver has to interfere. In Waymo's case, they are claiming, they're reporting one human interference every, I think, 5,600 miles, which is pretty darn good.
Well, I'm not talking about the technological aspect in the same way that I'm not talking about the data that people are suddenly surprised that was harvested from Facebook. Where did they think it was? I'm just talking about regular. In other words, this isn't a yay technology, boo human thing. This is all right. Practically speaking, What would cause in this technology? What would cause a car to be unable to recognize a human, a dog, a deer, a doe crossing in front of it?
The technology,
it seems like pretty basic. I'm not saying
it's not basic at all. I mean, all these systems use a number of scanners and cameras. With redundant systems, different technologies altogether. Scanners and cameras are not the same. The end result is the same, is to detect moving objects in front of the car. And they all do that to a certain degree. And some of that technology is available in cars right now at a much lesser developed
level.
But pedestrian detection or animal detection is a technology that is available in cars now. Why did it not work in this case? I'm not sure. I think the reason Uber pulled out is not because of the technological aspect of it. It's purely the negative spin that followed the accident. And there is, I go back to that repeatedly, is there's a psychological effect of accidents happening with self-driving cars. We are totally willing to accept the fact that humans are going to make mistakes and that bad things can happen as a consequence. We are not ready psychologically to accept that we may be the victims of technological incidents, problems.
I would like to be the marketing person who had to, you know, change that frame of mind. No, just because it's a heavy lift, because you can talk about in the abstract the safety statistics,
mm-hmm.
But when it actually occurs, it's a different there's a difference between the let's in the ivory tower invent this because it's so much better for everybody, and then you say
we're back to, and we discussed this weeks ago or maybe a couple months ago, there is also the whole artificial intelligence aspect of it. These systems react, and then computers make decisions. Like if a pedestrian is crossing the street, do we avoid the pedestrian and kill the passenger in the car? You know, those are choices. They're ethical choices that car companies and these companies such as Waymo and Uber are dealing with right now. It's a huge ethical question. What do we do? Do we prioritize the passenger, who is the client, because we prioritize the safety and the life of our passenger, or do we prioritize the life of the little baby in a stroller that's being pushed across the red light in a crosswalk? And those are decisions that have to be made. And in the case of autonomous cars, computers are making those decisions.
And the computers are, it's always important to remind people, computers have to be programmed by humans.
They do. They are getting more and more sophisticated. And, they can make certain decisions a lot quicker than we can. But it comes back to the biggest problem of all is not technical. It's ethical.
And moving on to ethical, having seen once again, whenever I watch sports, I'm always fascinated by the car adverts.
Yeah.
Which, shall we say, skirt in certain cases the fringes of ethical.
Sure. Like
all advertising.
Like all advertising.
It's the magic of advertising. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just as a professional skeptic, going to take this moment now to ask you, let's say that you're just a regular person watching an ad on TV.
Which I am.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, yes, no, because you've got more information.
In the case of cars, I'm an educated consumer.
Quoting Cy Sims, an educated consumer is our best customer, but I'm not sure that's the case in marketing. So let's just say that you're not. Let's just say that you are new to it, and you've got you're 10 years before, but you don't have any particular inclination towards, except for some sort of hormonal one, male, female, doesn't matter. It's like, okay, you like cars. Let's just say, how do you know from these opportunities, meaning the adverts, what should you really be looking at? Because the whole thing is designed to sell you that.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I read from time to time this columnist called Peter DiLorenzo, who writes a column, an online column on a website called autoextremist.com. And he is a former advertising executive who's worked most of his life, and he's got 20, 30 years of experience in auto advertising. And he's very critical, very sarcastic, takes no prisoners, and passes judgment on pretty much every single car ad there is out there. And I can come back with some details of ads he's reviewed. You know, we can do that some later time. But the bottom line is these ads are either selling an image or they're selling a product. And it's a different proposition if you're just selling an image, which, and I'll say it again, because this guy, for instance, Peter DiLorenzo, has mentioned it too. Subaru has done a great job over the last 50 years in just promoting an image of a safe, simple, reliable car. And even though Subarus are no longer that simple, they are still very safe, and the product line is very simple. And they convey a message, and if we've all seen the Subaru ads, and I think they're some of the ones that stick the most because they're consistent with their theme of, you know, love, or it's all about love and Subaru, and they're showing generations of
Subaru owners, etc.
Subaru owners.
And I'm just going to diverge, yep, because this was probably my, anyone who's listened to the show long enough will have heard this, but this was sort of my first head shake rattle. When Honda began selling their Civics and Accords way back when, and then evolved into a cool car to have. I mean, initially, mm-hmm, it was pretty much a tin can on wheels. All these cars essentially, in my view, in personal opinion, start out, these new lines start out as...
Simple product. Yep. And there are more examples, but...
Okay. But going back to the Honda for, mm-hmm, 1 second... When a Japanese client of mine at the time got to was in America, and what kind of car were they getting? I was absolutely astounded that Honda was not even, you know, Honda didn't crack the top five. They would have literally probably gotten a soubrette cart, a hot dog cart, before they got a Honda. And I was just struck by that, based on their upbringing. You know, young kid, so, you know, he had access. A young kid with resources had access. But the very car that I was convinced was a safe, good starter car, in his view, having grown up with it, was just not.
It's interesting. I think, to take Honda has been, they've put out great product. They started out with very simple cars. The Civic was, you know, very simple.
By the way, this was decades ago. I'm not speaking
thinking about the 1970s, you know, when the Civic arrived here
car,
in the mid-70s, 76. And then they followed that with the Accord and the Prelude. But again, it's a little bit like Subaru, very simple product line to begin with simple product. And, you know, young people bought into it, and the cars evolved as this generation of first-time buyers, maybe, or fairly new buyers, grew older, and people just returned and kept on buying Hondas. And then they're doing the same thing with Subaru. And Robin is not here, but if Robin were here, he'd be talking about the Subaru Ascent, which is the new three-seat SUV that is going into production now and that you can start buying. Again, it's a, you know, the strategy seems to be always pretty much the same. Start out with very basic product and
grow your audience along with the product.
Yeah,
that exactly. Makes perfect sense. But back to, let's just say you're that audience waiting, mm-hmm, to be grown, and you're watching a sporting event. You know, you're either going to want this really flash car that's going to put you in debt for the...
There are, and you're talking about advertising, and there's an ad right now that's running for the Kia Stinger, which is a sports car. It's a BMW/Audi, quote-unquote, fighter. It's a relatively fast car. It's obviously a little cheaper than an Audi or a BMW, and it's being promoted on TV in ads that show Emerson Fittipaldi, who was a 1970s world champion and an IndyCar driver in the 1980s and who's been long retired. And they show Emerson Fittipaldi driving that car. And there is a I'm not sure what the message is, because I really like Emerson Fittipaldi. And the Stinger is a cool car, but showing it on an oval track driven by Emerson Fittipaldi, to me, makes no sense whatsoever.
Until you said that, I didn't know what you were talking about, because you can't see my face on the radio, because when Jay mentioned it, I was like, going, huh? But now that you mentioned the Emerson Fittipaldi part, but I too am absolutely mystified. Like, who's this for?
Your guess is as good as anybody's.
Okay.
And I think Kia has a problem right now, and I'll jump into I do want to talk a little bit about the New York Auto Show that's coming up next week. And amongst the new cars coming out is the new upscale Kia, I think they call it the K900 or the 900. So it's a full-size luxury car. And the bottom line is, very few people are going to buy it. I mean, Hyundai, the Kia sister company, created a new brand, Genesis, to sell their luxury cars. I don't see Kia selling a K900, which just the name of it is...
Well, unless you want to call it the dogmobile.
Right, exactly.
Which may be a selling point.
I think the K900 and the Stinger are going to be tough sells, and they're probably great cars. I know the Stinger is a great car. Not too many people are going to buy them. I mean, but they promote an image for the brand.
But if they're taking the long view, you know, one day in 10 years, 12 years, that's it.
And time will tell.
You remember when Infiniti came out?
Yeah.
You know, I always get confused. But these companies have done a fairly good job, again, over time, in keeping their regular.
Some of them have, and others less.
And others less.
Toyota, with launching off Lexus back in the 90s, did a great job, and to this day, Lexus is still a brand, a luxury brand that's truly recognized.
Don't automatically go, oh yes, that's Toyota's higher.
Correct.
And
I think Nissan did not do as well with Infiniti. Nissan's not doing as well.
Period.
As Toyota, and they've been struggling with their brand image for quite some time now. And part of the reason for that is they've been, you know, part of their strategy has been to sell a lot of cars to rental companies. They have a lot of fleet sales, and so they're discounted cars. They don't make a lot of they're lower profit margins. So the company struggles a bit more, and the image is just not what it used to be.
You know, they need to, if they're still alive, hire the people, the Hertz and Avis. Because Nissan, if they just made a point of being number two, it was a very, very, when you think about it back in the history of advertising.
A lot of times there's nothing wrong with being number two.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
But that was what was so clever about.
You can break your neck trying to become number one, and the big companies have all done that. You know, GM was the biggest car manufacturer in the world. Toyota and Volkswagen have claimed that spot over the last few years. Quite honestly, I don't even know who right now is technically the largest auto company in the world.
Although for all of VW's troubles, they...
Well, first of all, VW is doing great, always has done great, in Europe, and they have bought out a bunch of brands. We've talked about
right.
this before. Seat in Spain, Skoda in what used to be Czechoslovakia, and I think they're technically in Slovakia.
And Skoda used to be a car that
it was laughable.
Yeah.
They were all over every time. it was laughable.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Europe. It was laughable.
Yeah.
There's no other word.
Yeah.
Anyway, cars have gotten a lot better. I do want to bring up the New York Auto Show. It's coming up next week.
No Skoda?
I don't think there's any Skodas. Here's the thing with the New York Auto Show. It is not a show like Geneva. It is, I call it, it's a big sales show.
It's America.
It's America. It's a showroom. If you're looking at buying a car in the foreseeable future, go to the auto show, go sit in every car you can get yourself into, and
backside into, and you know,
and
some,
you can get into a lot of cars.
Yep.
You can get a good idea of what's out there. It also gives you a great feel for what the quality of the seats and interior is like, because these cars take a beating. If you go towards the end of the show, those cars get nasty. The seats get, you know,
squished in and concave.
The dashboards are scratched. Things don't work. Things are broken off. Gear knobs are not even in the cars because they take them out beforehand so people don't steal them, which really makes no sense in my mind. But it's a great place to go. It's easy access is at the Javits Center. There's plenty of parking around. It's $20 or less if you buy the tickets online, and it's in 4 or 5 hours you can get a good tour.
And it's so different. In the same way of an art or any trade show, it gives you an idea, not in the antiseptic, you know, this is the dealership, this is what it looks like, this is our line. But it gives you a pretty wide view of what all's out there, as we say.
It gives you a pretty wide view, and I mean, I enjoy the people watching.
Sure.
And you get an idea of who's gravitating around which cars. And I'd just like to bring up a few that should be interesting to see at the New York Auto Show. I'm not sure yet if I'll be able to go. I know I can't go with Robin and his group. Hopefully, I won't be banned
for life.
For life.
Yeah, this could be, but we'll see what happens.
But there are a few interesting cars coming out. VW is coming out with a 5-passenger large SUV, so they're kind of changing the styling a little bit on the Atlas and coming out with a shorter version of it, not a 3-seater. So probably something that's more like what the Touareg was, which is interesting. I don't know if the new Jetta will be there, the 2019 Jetta, but it should be a great car. The Arteon will be there, which is kind of a four-door coupe sedan, which brings me to sedans in general. Ford is coming out with an updated Fusion. Nobody really cares. And Honda is having problems, by the way, selling their Honda Accord, brand new car of the year. There are now supplies of over 100 days of Honda Accord sitting on lots. So midsize plain Jane sedans are just not selling anymore. That part of the market, that market segment, is shrinking.
It's moribund, but I will, having, you know, lived long enough, and I remember when SUVs were the only thing to get.
Yeah, well,
you know, Ed, we're in another one of those phases where, mm-hmm. right now, and I know the age range, but that will change.
But SUVs have gotten better. They don't tip like the infamous Ford Explorers back in the 90s.
Forgetting that for 1 second, I will never forget Dolly Chamberlain, the late lamented Dolly Chamberlain, who could not get into my brother's 4Runner. So as one ages through, evolves through different life cycles.
Yeah, there's a car for everybody. Every stage of life.
Yeah.
A couple more interesting cars, or interesting somewhat. Toyota RAV4, new small SUV from Toyota. Subaru will be showcasing a concept car of the new Forester. The Forester is at the end of its five-year life cycle.
Okay.
So that'll be coming out. I'm pretty sure we'll see a Ford Ranger pickup, the new smaller pickup truck from Ford.
I just still remember. I've got – my mind is not elastic.
And it's not
I
that
still
small.
Remember when they got rid of it.
2011.
Right.
And the new one is arguably
– here we're back.
Yeah. And it's this is the pickup truck that's been sold all around the world for the last 5 or 10 years. So it's been adapted for the U.S. market. It's a little ironic that we're the last to get a pickup truck from Ford. But – hey, it is what it is. Couple
marketing.
New wagons, V60, Volvo, nice cabriolet on the C-Class Mercedes, new Audi A6, A7, and I think maybe the A8. So, interesting stuff. A V8 finding a big Cadillac, as it should have.
He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.